Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It is a minute past the hour on this, the 23rd day of September 2015. Happy vernal equinox. Happy first day of autumn. And it's a dandy here. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, reproductive freak. And this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And, of course, we all know what Prayer Meeting Wednesday means. It's going to be an examination of the excesses of the evangelical fundamentalist right. And, among some other variations on that theme. But rather than go through the usual and ordinary and typical Prayer Meeting Wednesday shtick, you know, the heck and the glory and the amen and the, all of that, well, I am still Archpope Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Antagonized Agnostic, Animated Animist Bob Kincaid, but we will dispense with some of the other shilly-shallying and shenanigans in favor of getting into something really, really quite interesting and quite compelling. You know, the whole reason... this is the Horn. Did I say that? I don't know. The whole reason for Prayer Meeting Wednesday is because you can't... You can't shake a stick in this country without running across some fundamentalist theocrat, and I think we all understand that there are more of them now than there ever have been. And those of us who try to provide a little bit of a check on them by pointing out just how awful they are, well, there aren't nearly enough. But I tell you what, the ones there are Jim Dandy. And I am tickled pink right now to have with us one of the best. She comes from the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, where she's the senior research director there. And she's an author. Most notably, Liars for Jesus, the Religious Rights Alternate Version of American History. And she is the personal thorn in the side of notorious fabricator of foundational facts, David Barton, you know, that the fraud merchant who is the darling of the Beckerhead, Glenn Beck. And with all that having been said, let me introduce for our consideration and conversation, Chris Rada. Chris, are you there?
I think so. You hear me?
You are there.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking time to join us on this Prayer Meeting Wednesday. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm not blowing smoke when I say that you're somebody that I don't know. David Barton probably has a Chris Rada voodoo doll, right?
And I have a David Barton voodoo doll.
Ooh, right there. Yeah. How did you get into this line of work?
Completely accidentally. I used to do something totally different, and it was around 2002. Remember Judge Roy Moore's Rock, his Ten Commandments thing?
Oh, dear
in the
God.
Courthouse? You remember that, right?
Sadly.
This is, he's back on the bench now, amazingly. But anyway, this is back during the whole thing with him refusing to remove the rock and the whole bit. And like I said, I was doing something completely different. I was sitting at my desk waiting for a phone call or something.
There I was, minding my own business.
When this is back in the days of the old AOL message boards.
Oh,
where
God.
You click on a news story on AOL, and it would lead to, like, message boards where all sorts of people are saying all sorts of crazy crap. And I just stumbled into the message board, like I said, just killing time. And I'd always been very, very into American history. And I'm reading some of the stuff people are posting that's supposedly historical fact and thinking, like, some of it I knew for a fact wasn't true. Some of it I'm like, that just doesn't sound right. And I started kind of fact-checking these things, and I started posting comments on these message boards. And my comments, as I started arguing with these people, started getting longer and longer, and then eventually, like, footnoted. And then people started thinking I was, like, an expert on the subject and started emailing me with questions. And it, all of this eventually, like, evolved over the course of a number of months into some people on those message boards saying, you should really write a book. And I had never written anything before in my life, and I'm thinking this is a crazy idea. But I got talked into it and wrote Liars for Jesus. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, and Liars for Jesus has been a has been a considerable success.
Yeah.
What do you have over the course of time that you've been doing this, Chris? Do you have a a favorite's kind of a strange word. But do you have is there somebody at the top of your list of people who will just do anything, say anything, advance any kind of BS claim as long as they think it's going to benefit their theocratic urges?
Oh, God, that's a long list.
I said top of. I mean, we can work our way down.
No, top of course, we have Barton. We have Glenn Beck. Huckabee's got this video series out now for kids, cartoons, you know, because just what every child wants, like, you know, a cartoon about the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Reagan Revolution.
No, now stop it. You're kidding.
What?
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
He's got a cartoon series for kids about the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Okay. It's this, you might see ads for this. They pop up, like, on Facebook, pop up everywhere. It's got, like, Mike Huckabee's in it. It's just, get this free DVD about, you know, God in America, whatever. Okay, it's really like, remember the old record clubs? Okay, once you get this free DVD, you keep getting another one every month conveniently billed to your credit card. So I got like 30. I finally just canceled because now I realize that there's going to be like 70 of the damn things at like $16.90 a pop, right? I've already got like 30 of them.
That could turn into some real walking around money pretty quick.
Yeah. So anyway, so they're indoctrinating kids early. You know, meanwhile, you have, who's it, Franklin Graham going after this new Muppet show, accusing them of indoctrinating kids into a sinful lifestyle. I don't know how the Muppets are going to indoctrinate kids into a sinful lifestyle, but, you know, the accusations from there say, oh, they're trying to indoctrinate kids. Well, it's them that's doing the indoctrinating.
Well, sure. And you know, how are the Muppets going to indoctrinate kids? The same way Tinky Winky and SpongeBob do.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, oh, God almighty. It's got to be, at one and the same time, it's got to be kind of wacky and fun for you, but at the same time, it's also got to be face palm, head to desk kind of work. What's an average day? I mean, How much of this theocratic garbage do you run across in any given 24-hour period?
Well, for me, it's basically nonstop. It's all day long. It's often 7 days a week. Between working for the Military Religious Freedom Foundation and I'm working on Liars for Jesus Volume 2 is close to being done.
Right, because Liars for Jesus actually came out a few years ago.
Actually, it's like 9 years ago. I intended to write follow-up volume one originally it was just going to be one short book. But then once I got into it, there was like so many lies that it's probably going to end up being like a four-volume series. But I had to put off volume two because writing volume one led to my working for the Military Religious Freedom Foundation when in 2007, Liars 1 came out in 2006. In 2007, I was blogging on a website called talktoaction.org, and there was Bruce Wilson, one of the co-founders of that website, had stumbled upon the fact that there was a David Barton essay on the myth of separation between church and state.
Oh, don't they love that one?
We get this, the junior ROTC, high school ROTC, core curriculum, American history textbook. Okay, so I wrote an article on Talk to Action about that. Someone who, a reader of Talk to Action, and I believe a friend of Bruce's, read that article and thought, hey, Mikey Weinstein at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation is going to want to know about this. And this friend was a volunteer with that organization. And she connected me with Mikey, and he needed researchers. I needed a job. So here we are over 8 years later. But it was really David Barton who was responsible for me ending up working for the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. And now Barton on his radio show is constantly attacking Mikey Weinstein and lying about him to the point of, like, you know, slander and defamation constantly on his radio show. So it's like all come full circle. And then also the pushing of the fake American history in the military. Barton's books are in, like, the libraries at West Point, the Air Force Academy, in lots of military-based libraries.
And let me guess, unlike, say, a biology textbook in Alabama, there's no sticker on Barton's books at West Point that say, behold, this book is full of crap.
Well, no.
Of course not.
Of course not.
I mean, my God, you said like a four-volume series. Suddenly, I had this mental image of an ad on TV. You know, Tales from the Old Fraud. You know,
Well, what did you call him in your introduction? Because I think I want to steal it from you.
Oh, what, the evangelical fundamentalists?
No. What you called Barton something that was all the words began with an F.
I don't know.
Something fabricator.
Serial fabricator and fraud merchant?
Nah, it was better than that. Oh, well, I'll listen back to the podcast.
Yeah, lucky for us, there's a podcast. Right, exactly. Well, help yourself by all means, because we have an especial interest here at the Horn in American history. We have an actual, real, live, honest-to-God, trained PhD expert in the founding. And he broadcasts 3 days a week, and he's one of the most genial souls you will ever meet in your life, Dr. Bill O'Brien. And all I have to do is you know, just slip him a little David Barton. It's like, hey kid, the first one's free, and boop, and suddenly my dear and genial friend is, why Bob, this man's a liar. Well, yes, Dr. Bill, he is.
He does, like, really, he brings out the worst in people. I mean, like, I'm usually pretty easygoing, but, like, some of the things, like, I just, my head wants to explode.
But the problem is that he metastasized. It's not just Glenn Beck. Pastor, brother, reverend, governor, diabetes cure, snake oil salesman, presidential candidate Mike Huckabee. He's influenced. There's an entire alternate American history now, thanks to this guy, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, people really, really don't get how much of an influence he really is, and how dangerous he really is. And you know, I really wish as many people who are, say, PhD historians and stuff like that would get involved in fighting him, because as you know, as there are PhD scientists fighting the creationists, because this is even more dangerous. And people don't understand that this is influencing how people vote in a big way, not some little, you know, getting someone a couple hundred more votes. So we're talking thousands, if not millions, and in local elections, in state elections. That Barton runs these, they're like pastors' conferences where a bunch of pastors will come. They'll be all like the Republican candidates and stuff like that. This is, you know, when an election is coming up. And then those pastors go back to their congregations and spread the Barton stuff, and also not just spreading Barton's lies, but doing these get out the vote things and making sure people get to the polls to vote.
Exactly.
And it's all tax free. Their own best interests.
Sure.
Because honestly, most of those people who believe Barton, who say repeat his lies on the internet or vote based on their whatever, they genuinely believe this stuff is true. Because they have to. The Barton's very good at getting these people to believe this stuff is true so that these people think that the crazy far-right, agenda, political agenda is legitimately, like, justified by history. And that is what will make them put it above their own best interest. Like, you know, people ask, why do so many, you know, lower and lower middle class people vote for Republicans? Well, this is why.
Because they're in the churches every Sunday. The pastor is standing in the pulpit and he is telling them outrageous, obvious, disprovable lies.
Right.
And it's all tax free.
Exactly. Making them think it's their religious duty to vote this way.
Right, because there's no credible historical argument to be made. I mean, it just doesn't exist that Abraham Lincoln was some sort of born-again, zealot, maniac, evangelical. And yet it's nothing to hear them, to hear a Barton or one of the people who have sort of glommed onto his teaching say something like, did you know Abraham Lincoln had a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ? When the most the man would do is walk across the street to the church there on Lafayette Square and sit in the back pew once in a while.
Right, and also use the right, you know, religious rhetoric in speeches and stuff, which all presidents have done.
Right, sure.
That's no indicator of their actual beliefs.
Oh, no. But
they'll be the first to say that Obama is just putting on a show when he goes to a Christian church or when he uses religious language. But then the double standard of if some president in history used the same religious language, it means they were a born-again Christian.
Well, exactly. And everybody was, from Ben Franklin. And probably one of the most pernicious doctrines to rise out of this, Chris, don't you think, is this notion that there is no separation between church and state.
Well, right, yeah. I was actually just in working on Liars Volume 2, just finished up I don't write the books in order, chapters in order, and I was just finished up writing what is going to be the last chapter of the book, which is about the Danbury letter and the real history behind it and all of that. And what the lie is there is what they need to do to be able to dismiss the Jefferson's words, wall of separation between church and state, is to lie about why the Danbury Baptists wrote to Jefferson. Okay? So what they do is they claim that the Danbury Baptists wrote to Jefferson because for some reason in 1801 they were afraid of the proposed First Amendment, which of course had been ratified 10 years earlier, but that the Danbury Baptists were afraid of the federal government being able to infringe on their free exercise of religion, because just the mention of religion in the First Amendment opened the door to future interference by the federal government in religion, right? Now, that's absolutely not why the Danbury Baptists wrote to Thomas Jefferson. They weren't even asking for help from Thomas Jefferson. They were just telling him about the horrible situation they were in their own state, and they were talking about their state government. So, like, when Barton quotes the letter from the Danbury Baptist to Jefferson, he edits out all the parts that would make anybody reading it, even people in Barton's type of audience, question, well, that doesn't sound like they're talking about the federal government. That doesn't sound like they're talking about the U.S. Constitution. So they just edit out, Barton in his books edits out, and this is not just Barton, all the history revisionists do this. So basically what they do is they they make up a story about why the Baptists were writing to Jefferson, so that then they can say Jefferson was just reassuring them that the federal government would never interfere with their free exercise of religion. Because to these people, it's as if the Establishment Clause doesn't exist. It's all only about the free exercise.
Right. They famously put it, there's no freedom from religion, just freedom of religion.
Right.
This has grown over time. And one of the things I don't understand is how a hustler like David Barton, this guy doesn't have a PhD in history, does he?
Oh, no, he's got like a honorary doctorate from Pensacola Christian College.
No.
I said, no, yeah, seriously. He's got, I think he was like a, was he a math teacher before that? Or he has a degree from Oral Roberts in religious education or something. I mean, I'm not a person who, I don't have a PhD in history either. Barton's got more education.
Neither
of us has any education in the area.
But you don't hold yourself out as a particular expert. You just debunk this stuff.
Here's the difference, too, is I don't claim to have any particular qualifications. Barton lets people, he won't call himself Dr. Barton with this honorary PhD from Pensacola Christian College.
Say that again.
People advertise him as Dr. Barton, he doesn't stop them from doing that.
Oh, God, practicing history without a license. It was just a couple of years ago, and it was an unheard-of thing when his Christian publisher said, sorry, we're not publishing this book.
Well, no, they published it, and it hit the New York Times bestseller list, and then they pulled it.
Right, yeah, that's what it was. That's what it was. And that's even more unheard-of. You know, we're pulling this.
Yeah. I'm still waiting, because he promised back when that was pulled, we're going back to 2012 here, so this is like 3 years ago, and on Glenn Beck's show, Beck vowed to put out the new edition, because how Barton was weaseling out of this was by saying that, Thomas Nelson, which was the publisher, cut 20,000 words of the book, and that was the stuff that would vindicate him. Okay, so Barton said he was going to be putting out a new edition of this book with that extra 20,000 words of stuff that was going to vindicate him from all the accusations that he, his book was full of crap. Never happened. Barton is still selling on Amazon. Like, now he's down to, he bought back I think it was 17,000 copies from Thomas Nelson that hadn't been sold yet. Right. 3 years later, he's still selling those on Amazon. I think he's running out now because it's down to the Thomas Nelson Book Club edition. But I'm waiting to see when he does run out of these. Is he just going to hope that people forgot that he said 3 years ago that he was going to be putting out a new edition? And Glenn Beck, he claimed that Simon & Schuster is publishing it.
I thought they were a reputable publishing house.
Well, they published an imprint of Simon & Schuster. There's a conservative imprint that publishes Glenn Beck's books. So that is Simon & Schuster. It's their conservative book imprint. But I don't even think even they would publish a book that's not factually accurate as far as, Beck's books, of course, is a bunch of bull in those, but he's a commentator. It's not being put out as a history book. But, Barton put out this big thing about how Simon & Schuster is publishing the next edition of his book, and he's never taken that down as far as I know. So we'll see what happens when he eventually runs out of these thousands and thousands of copies that he bought back from Thomas Nelson.
Oh, jeez. Well, let's take a look, for instance, just to get your thoughts on a couple of things. Chris, let's take a look at the something, as they used to say on Law & Order, ripped from the headlines. Mike Huckabee and you'll have to forgive me my little nicknames. I think if I met the man in person, I would probably call him that just by accident. It would absolutely be an accident, I promise.
If I met him, I'd call him worse things than that, and not by accident.
Well, you know, we do too, because this is the internet, and we can say the fun words.
Oh, we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I've been watching my language.
Oh, don't. I mean, that can.
Oh,
cause
don't. Okay. That can, well, that was can, a George Carlin.
Yeah, you can use all seven.
I can use all seven, huh?
But he's declared that. Barack Obama isn't Christian enough, and he's mad at him for inviting some gay people to meet the Pope. Because
I didn't realize he had invited some gay people to meet the Pope. That's nice.
If a person says, I'm a Christian, but you invite the Pope into your home, and then you invite a whole bunch of people who are at odds with the Catholic Church policy, I think there's something very unseemly about that. And it seems that the Vatican itself is very concerned about who the president has invited to meet the Pope. Let's see. It was a classless decision to transform Pope Francis's visit to the White House into a politicized cattle call for gay and pro-abortion activists. Cattle.
Okay.
Gay people are cattle now, Chris.
Okay.
The problem for me is that by using American history as they do, and to a certain extent world history, did you know Hitler was an atheist? Never mind that whole Roman Catholic baptism thing. Oh, wait a minute, I have to check in. 626, y'all, 626. Gerald, we have a nightly Hitler pool. Whatever time I see, then there's a prize, only there isn't. But at any rate, when, and it's a theme that I've been working on and trying to develop here, Chris, this idea that that they don't just say this crazy stuff because they want to bring in more flock. You tell me if I'm wrong. My thesis is that these theocrats, these Taliban Christians, these evangelicals, that their actual goal is to fundamentally transform our system of governance.
All right, it's the Seven Mountains strategy, the Dominionist Seven Mountains to take over. Anytime you see any of these groups that say reclaim or restore, you know, like usually they use the word reclaim. This is the Seven Mountains of education, media.
I know about the Seven Mountains. By which they will completely take over the culture.
Well, it's the thing. It's the complete. That's it. It's the Seven Mountains of the culture.
Right, and then I guess it turns into some sort of perverse episode of Oprah. You know, you get a noose, you get a noose, you get a noose. But you know, the assaults, for instance, if you were watching the pageant a couple of weeks ago. When Ted Cruz began opining against the 14th Amendment, oddly enough, that's the amendment that says that if you're a naturalized citizen, you're a daggum citizen, and you know, there's Ted,
right,
oblivious to it. All of this, these things seem, and perhaps tell me if this you think it's a danger. We as progressive people. And as people who are not under the sway of the particularly loopy brands of so-called Christianity, we tend maybe to overlook this, or to think that it's look at the funny fundies. But there's a real danger out there, isn't it?
I mean,
that's kind of what you've been documenting.
Right, and you're absolutely right. And that's one of the things that drives me crazy is I make fun of these people too, but I also seriously fight them. Because, you know, there's too many people out there that really underestimate the influence that these people have. And, you know, like people say, like with any like legislation about say reproductive rights or minimum wage even or any of these things, they'll be like, well, you know, how is this happening? How did these people get into Congress that are voting these way? This and that. This is how. And what the people just don't realize that, like, I feel like going after the history revisionism is going after what, cutting it off at the roots kind of thing. Because, you know, take the minimum wage. Barton has this thing where he goes through, like, citing Bible verses to convince these people that Jesus would have opposed the minimum wage, would have opposed capital gains tax, and things like that, right? As one for the minimum wage, he'll say the parable of the workers in the vineyard, where the one he was last will be first, that thing where the guy goes and picks up one worker in the morning, one in the afternoon, one at night. They all got paid the same, whatever. But to Barton, twists that into Jesus would oppose the minimum wage. And people believe him. Because they, you know, we're talking about people who don't read the Bible and, interpret it for themselves and realize that things are metaphors and what that parable actually meant, what the meaning of it was, that all they go by, they want someone else to tell them what it means. So they are open to believing what Barton is telling them it means, which is that Jesus would have opposed the minimum wage. So you'll have people who are making minimum wage. Why on earth would they vote for Republicans who don't want to raise the minimum wage? That's why. So that's where the influence comes from. That's where the people being mystified at why would these people be voting against their own best interests? It's all because they are brainwashed into thinking through the use of all these lies that it's their religious duty to vote that way.
Well, exactly. And the same thing applies to any kind of social welfare program. Ask an evangelical and he'll say, well, sure, Jesus said to take care of the poor, but he didn't say for government to do it.
Right. Or even look at the prosperity gospel stuff. Okay, so like in the Bible, like, from what I remember, Jesus had his, apostles, give up all your possessions, go from town to town with, like, nothing and, you know, whatever. And then you have these, like, Joel Osteen, these others, what's his name, Creflo Dollar, what the hell kind of name is that, Creflo Dollar?
I don't know, I had a bad case of Creflo once, but they gave me some penicillin.
Kenneth Copeland, the ones that have these, enormous mansions and stadium-sized mega churches and, have their own personal wealth is in the hundreds of millions and all of that, that is just so completely opposite of what's in the Bible.
Well, at one and the same time, if you tell them that, they go, no, it ain't. Because they're apparently reading they're reading a different Bible, or they've twisted it.
They're not reading the Bible. They're accepting what other people who are smarter than them are telling them it means.
Funny, we seem to have that problem the world over, don't we?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like all of the major religions have that problem. That some guy with either a corn pone accent like Huckabee or a beard and black robes in another faith tradition says, oh yeah, it says, and then whatever the hatred is laid out and people, oh, I don't have to read it now because that reading, that's hard. I mean, one of the things that has emerged lately and it strikes me as being an intersection between these two threads, Chris. And they come together in the form of and I know he was quite noteworthy in his profession, but they come together in the form of a man I like to think of as a blithering idiot named Ben Carson. Talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about the intersection between his religious bigotry and his constitutional ignorance that arises out of or that you one can't help but notice when he says something like, Yeah, I don't think a Muslim should be president.
Actually, my boss at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, Mikey, just wrote a piece on Daily Kos, I believe, yesterday about that with Ben Carson. And I got to watch it a little bit because I do work for a 501c3. Murph is a 501c3 nonprofit, so I can't. I got to.
No, that's why. That's why I. That's why.
With how much I get into politics here.
Yeah, that's why I do that part. But you're not getting into politics if you point out that, say, the Constitution, because that's just history and law. The Constitution is pretty clear that there shall be no religious test for the holding of office.
Well, yeah, but of course the history revisionists, their spiel about that is that. All they were talking about was between different denominations of Christians.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize that.
Which, of course,
is
crazy because you have writings from Jefferson, from Washington, from, you know, other founders saying that it was meant to include, you know, Muslims and Hindus and, you know, everybody. I mean, it, you know, but their thing is that it was all about that there not be a all the First Amendment meant was that there wouldn't be a national church and that one Christian denomination wouldn't be favored above another.
But that they would all be Christians.
Oh, right, of course.
Yeah. Well, okay. So with that in mind, let's take a moment here then, and consider. Some of the other aspects, you mentioned the Seven Mountains Doctrine or the Seven Mountains Theology. Do you spend a lot of time worrying about, say, Dominionism and Reconstructionism?
Well, yes, I do.
Do tell why.
Oh, because, I mean, this watching the how many people are taken in by this stuff? Okay, like when remember when Glenn Beck was having those big rallies and those like stadium events and stuff?
Yeah, the ones that didn't involve a sweater.
Be like scary as hell. There was one I was watching. It was in some stadium. I think it was in Utah or Texas or someplace, and just the looks on the people's faces, like this, like you got the feeling like Beck or any of the speakers there who were influential could have told that audience of 8 or 10,000 people to go out and do just about anything, and they would have. And that is scary.
Well, the fact that the Christian Reconstructionists have done such a thorough job of infiltrating a whole lot of Protestant denominations,
right,
and that their particular hellscape vision of a future America is one, and you know they don't make any bones about it. They want to replace all the penal codes, all the criminal codes. They want to everything just gets replaced by Old Testament law.
Right.
Some people say, you don't have to worry about them. Are you that dismissive?
Oh God, no, no, a lot of it, when you say infiltrated the denominations, that it's not exactly that. It's that they're, you know, Focus on the Family, James Dobson's.
Oh, absolutely.
They had this thing called the Truth Project, right? And that's one that I found out about because we were getting a lot of complaints about it being pushed at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. We were getting complaints about this being really heavily promoted and inappropriately pushed by the army on our soldiers, right? And that was a program that wasn't to convert people to Christianity, but to get the Christians who aren't the right kind of Christians, who aren't the Dominionists, who aren't the Reconstructionists or hardcore fundamentalists, to become what Dobson and the other Dominionists see as real Christians with the right biblical worldview is the phrase you'll hear all the time. And according to the Truth Project's own website, their statistic is that they think that only 9% of professed Christians are the right kind of Christians or have the right biblical worldview. So you'll hear them say a lot about, like, they'll talk about the church, what has happened to the church. Okay, so it's not so much that they've, because there's plenty of liberal Christian denominations, liberal Christians or
United Churches of Christ, Episcopalians,
still,
right.
But the effort that they're making to, you know, try to convert those, and this is a lot of what we see at MRF with, in our, 96% of our clients are actually Christians of one sort of or another, either mainline Protestants, Catholics.
Who the fundies will not leave alone.
Right, exactly. And that people are surprised by that because, you know, you get on Fox News and everybody and David Barton, they'll say we're, you know, a militant atheist organization, this and that, which is ridiculous because I'd say a good 80% of our people who work for MRF, the advisory board members and all of that are actually Christians, okay? And 96% of the people who come to us for help are Christians. They're just not considered by the Dominionists to be the right kind of Christians.
And what kind of, I mean, what kind of abuse, what kind of oppression does that, I mean, what shape, what form does that take, Chris?
Well, in the military, I've got all sorts of, well, a lot of it comes from these, within the military itself, from chaplains and commanders that are fundamentalists, but also these parachurch ministries that are allowed to operate within the military, and some of which even get, that was my dog yawning.
Oh, I know.
That. Now my puppy is on the floor here right by my feet.
Yeah, as an aside, do I understand that you have an Italian greyhound or something? Did I see a picture of an Italian greyhound on your Facebook page or... a dog lounging, watching someone tear out the kitchen.
Oh, no, he wasn't lounging. He was afraid. They were, you're talking about a post I posted yesterday?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's actually a lab pit bull mix. He's a puppy,
oh.
But right now he's just really skinny because he's like a puppy and he's getting taller before he gets wider.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
They were installing new kitchen cabinets in my kitchen and he was afraid of the power tools. So he ran in and it was just the way he ended up sprawled on the couch in my office that made him look.
Yeah.
Really
cause it kind of had,
skinny. It
kind of had the look of one of those, you know, paint me like one of your French girls, Jack. Moments, you know, from Titanic.
it was just the look on his face of absolute horror that I just thought was so hilarious.
I thought, well, is that a greyhound? Because I couldn't quite make it out. But anyway, now that we've had a lovely little diversion there, all these little para, what did you call them?
Para church. Ministries. We're talking about like Campus Crusade for Christ, those sorts
of things. Yeah, Fellowship of Christian Athletes.
So there's a whole bunch of military, like Campus Crusade for Christ has its military ministry, right? And then there's others like the Navigators, another Dominionist organization. There's ones, all the children's ministries, the military youth community or community youth ministries, which gets hundreds and hundreds of thousands, millions actually of DOD contract money. There was one group affiliated with them was actually stalking kids on military bases by following the kids from their school bus stops on the military bases to their off-base public schools, trying to find out which of the kids were, their word, unchurched. Okay? And these groups are doing this, some of them with DOD contract money. But with the, say, like Campus Crusade for Christ and others, their words, they say that the reason that they target the military is to create this like force of, their words, government paid missionaries for Christ. Okay, so we actually, there's a video of the Campus Crusade guy at the Air Force Academy. You're gonna have to be quiet there, Herc.
Hercules.
If he starts barking too much, I'll quickly go throw him in the kitchen.
No worries.
Or out a window. But no, I'm not an animal abuser. So anyway, you have this guy sitting there at a desk at the Air Force Academy, this Campus Crusade, one of their representatives there, on video saying, when the cadets leave here, they are government-paid missionaries for Christ. And this is allowed to go on every I don't know what night of the week it is now, it used to be Monday nights, may still be. At the Air Force Academy, they have this thing called the SPIRE, Special Programs in Religious Education, where these civilian military ministries come in, and they have a whole night of, they break up into groups, whatever ministry the people, join at the Air Force Academy. There was one called Cadets for Christ that was, we got complaints from, I think it was the parents of four different female cadets. This ministry was remember the old shepherding movement? That it was so,
oh, yeah.
That was so crazy that even Pat Robertson denounced it, where the male is the shepherd, the woman is the sheep. And this Cadets for Christ operating at the Air Force Academy, literally arranging marriages for the...
Oh, that's only a little bit creepy.
Yeah, they're not creepy at all. But we were contacted by the parents, and we're often contacted by parents of the people in the military because they're so disturbed by what they're hearing or reading in letters from their kids who are in the military. In this case, one of the cadets, her family was Catholic, and this military ministry at the Air Force Academy made her cut herself off from her family because they're Catholic, so they're unsaved heathens.
Wow. But this isn't just...
Unfortunately, this didn't happen. I believe the prospective groom's family talked him out of it when he was home on leave or something like that, so it didn't end up happening. But that's what's going on. This is what we're dealing
and
with.
And this is in no wise crazy. this is in no wise limited, though, to the Air Force Academy, is it?
Oh, no. The Air Force Academy was where it all started because...
Well, that was my next question. How did this take root?
Excuse me?
That was my next question. How did this all take root? I mean, was somebody just asleep at the switch? Did this happen during the Reagan administration?
It's been going on really since, like, the late 90s, after the Gingrich revolution there, when the late 90s, when Congress changed, what went on in the late 90s, that's when it's kind of started. Okay. And of course got worse, way worse during the Bush administration. But how Mikey Weinstein found out about it and then subsequently founded MRF to fight it was that both of his sons were cadets at the Air Force Academy. And the harassment they were facing as Jewish cadets. And when it happened, all sort of came to a head was when, remember the Passion of the Christ out? Or as Mikey calls it, the Jesus Chainsaw Massacre?
Yeah, Mel Gibson's little snuff film. Yeah.
Well, they were promoting this so heavily at the Air Force Academy, with posters of the bloodiest scenes from the movie and stuff being shown on the big screen TVs in the dining area and flyers being left on the cadets' plates and emails from the command structure encouraging cadets to attend and all of that. And of course, just as in the civilian world, that movie brought out a lot of anti-Semitism. So on a visit to the academy he was talking to one of his sons who told him that he was afraid he was going to get in trouble and Mikey was wondering, what's he talking about? Why is he going to, afraid he's going to get in trouble? And his son told him that we can swear, that if one more person called him a fucking Jew, he was going to beat the crap out of him, or, you know, so that he realized there's a big problem at the Air Force Academy. And in, of course, you know, wanting to find out what was going on there because his sons were there, realized that it wasn't just at the Air Force Academy, it's military wide, and then founded MRF to be sort of, we're the only organization that specifically fights this stuff in the solely in the military.
And you're not going to be going out of business anytime soon, are you? I mean, it's not like this is letting up.
No, they've been, you know, in some ways, they've been just hiding it better. But now with what's going on now, there's been a little bit of a shift ever since a couple of years ago. With the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, these people kind of went on this, kind of shifted strategies to the... wanting the fundamentalist Christians, like encouraging them to be as overt as possible to flaunt the regulations. And then, of course, they have all these stories coming out about how the Christians are persecuted, like that Sergeant Monk guy with the, you know, he was fired for, you know, disagreeing with his commander about, you know, the gays or whatever, which turned out to be a bunch of bull. He wasn't fired. He was scheduled to be transferred to another unit, you know, things like that. But they've got now this like laundry list of stories of Christian persecution in the military, and the Family Research Council put out this thing of they put out several new editions, but 60 some odd stories of Christian persecution. It's called the Clear and Present Danger Report. And who's involved in that is Jerry Boykin. Remember Jerry Boykin?
Oh, our God is bigger than your God? Yeah, yeah.
Right, right, right. So here you have Boykin, who even like was kind of censured by the Bush administration for saying this stuff in uniform. He's now with the Family Research Council, and they're in league with this thing in Congress that many people don't know about and should know about, which is called the Congressional Prayer Caucus. A quarter of our House of Representatives belongs to this thing called the Congressional Prayer Caucus. Whenever you see a whole bunch of Congress members are writing to the, you know, Secretary of Defense about something or whatever, it's the Congressional Prayer Caucus. The head of it is Randy Forbes from Virginia. John Fleming's on it. Michelle Bachmann was when she was in Congress. Yeah. But it's the who's who list of the fundamentalist Christians in Congress. And we're talking a quarter of the House of Representatives belong to this.
Do you feel sometimes, Chris, like you're just holding back a horde of barbarians?
Yeah, kind
of. Are we still, you would know this, I've wondered from time to time, are we still shipping armaments to, say, Afghanistan that have Bible verses carved into the barrels of the rifles?
Oh, the Jesus rifles. I don't think so. Well, they were supposed to have kits to fix this, which was basically, I believe, like a Dremel tool that would be passed around or something like that. But our troops over there were not just using them themselves, but what this was this company, Christian arms manufacturer called Trigicon, or they manufacture
night vision scopes and stuff. Yeah,
and they had these references to Bible verses on all of them, and they got nicknamed the Jesus rifles. And there was a senior NCO in front of this big formation, within earshot of Afghan citizens who were locals who were working on this base over there, yelling at this formation of troops that if you run out of bullets, then you use this thing as your Jesus club, and I mean, it was insanity. One soldier contact us who had somebody stick Afghan guy stick one of these things, the barrel of this thing, up his nose. I mean, this is, and then
it was a hair trimmer.
There, right? That's some hair trimmer. But the father of this was a highly publicized story. This, you know, ABC News and all that. After we uncovered this and all of that, and the Army was supposed to be sending these kits to modify them, but then in their infinite wisdom, the Army decided it would be easier to modify the ones that weren't over in Afghanistan and Iraq first, but to do the ones that were in storage here. But it was the ones over there that were causing the danger, of course. So we had a father of a soldier email us. His father was a Baptist minister emailing us to tell us that he had sent his son's unit rolls of thin duct tape to cover these things up for the safety of his son's unit.
Right, because that kind of did inject an element of religious war into
right.
Yeah.
It's like the last thing we need to be doing. But they don't see it because,
well, I mean, apart from being in Afghanistan
stuff
in the first
like
place,
that,
but that's political. So
when we go after stuff like that, the reaction from the, you know, Breitbart.com and Glenn Beck and David Barton and the Family Research Council and those members of Congress is we're trying to infringe on our troops' religious free exercise by not allowing these inspirational biblical gun sights or scopes or whatever they are.
I mean, this is one step away from them wearing little wristbands with, let's see, WWJBCACI. Who would Jesus bust a cap in?
But on that one, on the Jesus rifles, the Church of England sided with us. That when they found out, because the British were also using these sites, and so I believe the Israeli army, it was international.
Oh, that must have gone over great in the IDF.
I mean, the Church of England agreed with us. Okay, so are they going to call them a militant atheist group?
Well, I mean, yeah, because that's where the... I mean, I was pondering just earlier today, Chris, because I do that because I'm weird. You think about all the people who were killed during the Protestant Reformation, and then you look at Mike Huckabee or a David Barton or a Glenn Beck, and you go, for this.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about it. And I don't understand where, because it's gained so much prevalence in the last few years. You mentioned it in reference, you referred to it earlier. I don't understand where they came up with this concept. Who ginned up this notion that if somebody brings a Christian a cold cup of coffee, it's persecution?
It really is about the level of it right now, isn't
it? Well,
it
is. I mean, it's exactly the same thing as back when Nero was spitting them on pikes and covering them in pitch and lighting the Vatican Gardens with them. It is the same thing. It is a direct analog.
Well, yes.
But
of course.
Where did it come
Everyone
from?
Everyone should be able to see that.
But I mean, seriously, where did it come from? I mean, how did minding your own business, how did being asked to mind your own business turn into, you know, one step away from, well, what did he say? From the ovens.
Yeah. I said, that's the same thing that's been going on, like, you know, in the military, in the civilian world. Look at all the cases that there have been. Actually, the appendix to what I wrote, besides Liars for Jesus, I have these two books, and I intend to do it for all the chapters of Barton's Jefferson Lies book, but a little book debunking all the lies chapter by chapter. And in one of the ones that's already done and out there, I have an appendix going through the Barton in that book has the, you know, the list of like all the ways Christians have been persecuted by the courts and arrested and this and that. So his footnote for these claims, and there's like 69 different cases he lists. So I started looking them up. And one by one, of course, there was more to the story. There was something, you know, they were just lying about it. One of them, Barton's footnote, literally, Barton's footnote, one of the websites he linked to in it about one of these cases actually had the words urban legend in it.
No.
yeah. So, you know, this has been going on.
Are there any citations to The Onion? I mean, it astonishes me because, I mean, I should probably, in the spirit of full disclosure, as we wrap this thing up, I should let you know, I am a recovering Southern Baptist, Chris.
Well, good for you.
I was dipped by the heel in this stuff early on, and really, I mean, the persecution thing is particularly interesting to me because as I was growing up, and you know, I'm not exactly doddering. I'm only 52, so that means I was growing up in the 70s in the Baptist church, and it was a Southern Baptist church, and you know, so we were taught about, you know, and you know, you shall be persecuted for my name's sake, and we all kind of had the general understanding that that's, you know, that's a case of, you know, you're standing there spreading the gospel, you know, doing the go ye unto all the world, blah, 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 blah. And somebody comes up and beats the holy hell out of you. That's persecution. It wasn't a matter of some atheist jumped in front of you to get the prime parking spot in front of the Kmart. But that's where we are now.
And I think in a way, like some of them, like, because there is no real persecution, like, they don't feel like they're, like, real Christians unless they're being persecuted. You know what I mean? Like, they need to, like, kind of trump up this
kind of, it's kind of
feelings of persecution.
It is kind of masochistic, in a way.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Chris, I know that I'm informed by an unnamed source in an undisclosed location that the reason Hercules was giving you a little bit of grief was because that was his walk time, and I would not interfere.
It's actually
with his
Hercule.
Walk.
He's named after Hercule Poirot.
Oh, okay.
His full name is Hercule Pitbull.
Oh, very nice, very nice, very nice. We yeah. I remember a schnauzer once named Herr Oscar Underfoot, but no, I know. It's his walk time. Hercule, I shall remember that. But I wanted to thank you very much for taking time to join us this evening. I love these kinds of conversations, and for pity's sake, I was going to say for heaven's sake, but let's not and say we didn't. For pity's sake, please let me know when Volume 2 comes out of Liars for Jesus, because I'm going to be wanting an autographed copy, and
sure.
I will thumb through it and refer to it, and among other things, we will let everybody know, and hopefully you'll come back and chat with us when the book comes out, so that everybody can have a copy. Maybe they could put one at West Point next to David Barton. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, me either. What a pity. But Chris,
although there
thank
is
you
one
much.
In the Liberty University Law Library, but I think it's probably there to, you know, teach the law students what they're up against.
Well, it's probably in the persecution section.
Yeah, persecution. Filed under P for persecution.
Exactly. Chris Rada, thank you so very much. I hope we will talk again. It has been a delightful conversation.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
All right. And good night, Hercule. Bye now.
Bye.
Author of Liars for Jesus and researcher with the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, skewerer of hypocrites, exposer of frauds, that's Chris Rada. And I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. Earther pointing out from the chat room, it all starts with the moral majority. They have to claim persecution so they can bully and persecute others. People are hesitant to stand up to someone who's claiming persecution even when they're attacking you. It's the liberal, sane person's fault of taking people at their word. I guess you're being persecuted or you wouldn't claim so. All too sadly, you know, true. By the way, I am reminded that this is Yom Kippur. So the Happy Day of Atonement for folks who celebrate that. Is Happy Day of Atonement, I don't know, Meaningful Day of Atonement? That maybe that works. But yes, and the Irish Dave tells me, so too also. Blood Moon, Popolapooza. And today is the Yom Kippur. Molotov, y'all, as Scott Walker once famously well-wished the Jewish community in Wisconsin. Molotov, y'all, the goots. That just never stops being funny. Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy in Vermont noting, great interview, Bob, streaming loud and clear on TuneIn. Note coming in from Jack in Shreveport. Oh, this will be fun. Subject line, Jesus' sayings, Limbaugh today. One of the biblical items the oxymoron was twisting around today was the give to Caesar what is Caesar's, gives to God what is God's, or whatever that is. As you said on some other biblical saying, this one was used to say that government shouldn't be in the business of helping people. Oh, no. Well, I'm sure he picked that up from, you know, Barton or one of those freaks. They do get around. Ugh. Meanwhile, coming from Michael in Madison, subject line, Campus Crusade for Christ. For what it's worth, as a young, naive, lapsed Catholic student at University of Wisconsin-Madison back in the late 90s, I got sucked in for a time by the relentless harassment and guilt-tripping of Campus Crusade for Christ. A few of my dorm mates, including my freshman year roommate, were heavily involved in it, so finally, I relented to peer pressure, attended a few awkward Bible studies, several clavern sing-along shindigs. Shindigs? They have shindigs in Wisconsin? Wow. And even one, and only one, miserable for me, fucking weekend of retreat. That whole experience, particularly that weekend, fast-tracked me on an agnostic bullet train to atheism. The pivotal moment was listening to my roommate testify, I gotta add the after the testify, to the entire retreat group, a few hundred college kids, about how God literally spoke to him. The word literally is in is asterisked. With very specific words that weekend, I just thought to myself and kept to myself, he's lying. I live with this dude. I can tell when he's lying. He just wants desperately to fit in here. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just bitter because God didn't say shit to me that weekend. Or ever. But even so, I'm 100,000% certain Campus Crusade, or Crew, as they cutely call themselves now, well, how freaking twee is that? I love that. That's a word I'm into these days. Twee. Are a bunch of toxic motherfuckers. That name alone, Crusade, for fuck's sake, I despise them. Well, amen. Amen. Because, primarily, they're despicable. And remind me to, I got a story, Dr. John and I swap archaeology stories from time to time, because he really is one, whereas I'm a wannabe. And I got to share this with you because, well, it's a true and compelling story of Christ's love, and I think it'll really speak to you on a spiritual level. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, before we go to a little bit of a break, a couple of notes. We didn't pass the plate or anything, but I want to thank Brother Deacon Asa for jumping in this evening. I really, really do appreciate that, and so does the entire Horn Family Commune, and on Wednesdays particularly Congregation, because that's how we keep this on, this whole little network that's been going for 10 years. Oh, wait a minute, I've got to beg. Oh, Jesus, please, give money! No. Okay, are you happy, Larry? It's too easy. It's like shooting whales in a bathtub. No, that's gross, shooting whales. Sorry. But you get the idea. We've got a payment to make on the Gulf Stream 5. Yes, we do. And payroll for the mansion's landscaping staff is It's a day past due, and they're not happy. Mm-hmm. Precisely. But also, huge thanks going out. This happened late at night, or late last night, I should say. Huge thanks going out to our buddy Gary, labor man. He said, all right, church night challenge. Come on, folks, dig deep. Thanks, Gary, a.k.a. labor man. And he has put $200 on the table, which entitles Gary, labor man, by the way, to the premium. And there is a premium on the table. I've mentioned that in the past. You know, the Last Mountain poster, I'll sign it and go and find those 4.97 seconds that I'm actually in the film and put that on there as well, and a message or whatever, or unsigned if you prefer. However you like it, it's up to you. But there is a $200 challenge on the table, which has just been knocked down to $150. So the next $150 that rolled in, well, they get doubled. So it would be, hopefully that will get met, because we're still trying to finish out September and the 1st of October, okay, because I will be away from the microphone all of next week. For those who like to mark calendars and such like, that would mean the 28th, 29th, 30th, 1st, and 2nd. 28th, 29th, and 30th of September, and the 1st and 2nd of October. And we'll be on the road doing some, Ferg and I are going to be doing some stuff for Cold River Mountain Watch related to the struggle against MTR, mountaintop removal. Carol, what's wrong with you? It's an even number. I'm happy to say now that $83, even, of Labor Man's Prayer Meeting Wednesday challenge have been met. Thank you very, very kindly, Carol and Brother Deacon Asa. If you want to help out and you never have before, you know the PayPal interface is, wait a minute. $103 have been met. Thank you, Jan and Jerry out in Vegas. Thank you very kindly. So $97 to go.
Yay.
If you've never participated before, you know, you can go to the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com, and that's where we've got the interface for PayPal. You can ignore the pushier questions about where you work and what you do and what time you take your break, that kind of stuff. Just get to the next screen where you make all your credit card, cash, PayPal choices, whatever. It's all right there. Via the United States Postal Service, you can participate that way as well. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. Checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid, as I never see him. That's stuff that Boss Man Wayne does. Note coming in from Luta, subject line, Campus Crusade blows donkey. Bob, when I was a young private in the Army, the base was always crawling with fundies, and while walking to and fro, because we were infantry and filled with poor people who couldn't afford cars, so we had to walk everywhere to buy our beer, but their starting line was always, excuse me, do you have a minute for Jesus? And we would say no, and they would just harass and wouldn't leave us alone. They would stalk the barracks, and it took years for it to be put a stop to by the commanding general. Yeah, why is it that's always the case? It goes on and on and on and on and on. But may I suggest, Luda, that even though you are no longer in the military, if somebody, and because that's still a pretty big opening gambit from the fundies, these evangelicals. Pardon me. Do you have a moment to learn about Jesus' plan for your life? And you look at him and you just say, only if you've got a moment for me to tell you about Shipe Totec's plan for yours. And then you get to tell him about the dear one flayed. Jeremy in Vermont with a reminder. Don't forget, Bob, that just like Jim Bob Duggar, you freak, you have too many children and are a freak for being a grandfather at 50. I am a reproductive freak. Can't work this. God, we're going to get so much mileage out of that. God bless you on this prayer meeting Wednesday, Larry in a huff. So anyway, break time. Lines are open. Want to engage in a little conversation? I think we could have a rather high old time of it, but there's also inspiring and heroic tales of faith in action here in Merca. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. All of that in the next hour and 45 minutes of the horn, right here. So, you know the numbers, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. And by the way, the equipment fund is still open. We're trying to finish off enough money to fix the Comrex telephone unit, which is probably going to be unpleasantly expensive, but not hopefully as expensive as buying a new one because, you know, trying to get everything spiffied up for when we start doing the guest stuff for Malloy, guest hosting stuff. At any rate, yeah, little break. This is the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah, wrong. That was anticlimactic. Huh, doesn't that just sound awful? Now I wonder what's screwed up. Ay, ay, ay. Pardon me for a moment, please. I was really kind of looking forward to a little bit of a break. Mm-hmm. Try it again. No, that still sucketh. Well, damn it. No break for you, Bob. Struck down by the Lord. I done been smote, smited, smit, smut, something. Oh, darn. Yeah, Robert up near Morgantown reminded me of something earlier. When he reminded me, what, really, already? It's that time again? The Voters Value Summit is a-coming up again. I figure maybe I'm thinking of CPAC. I mean, it just seems like these clavern meetings of these right-wingers, day after week after month, every other. But Robert says, I really hate that you're going to be away after the Values Voter Summit. There should be sound clips galore coming out of that. Maybe Malloy will use them. Oh, I have a feeling the Value Voter Summit will not escape his kind attention. No, not at all. All right, well, we shall forge ahead, shall we? Do let's. It was, like I said, heroic tales of faith in action. Let's go down to Talabama, shall we? And thanks to Isaac for this. Pointing this out to me. You know, one of the most important things that a cleric, a man of the cloth, can do is to comfort the grieving in their time of loss. You you know, some hand holding, some head patting. Well, you know, they're in a better place now, Ramona. Yeah. Mac Charles Andrews, Mac Charles Andrews, pastored the flock at the United Pentecostal Church, a place described as heavily conservative. And, well, he was full of the Holy Spirit. Unfortunately, well, no, fortunately, you pick. Mac Charles Andrews, man of God, servant of the loving Christ. He had boundary issues with just how and when to be a sharing of that love. Thomasville, Alabama, United Pentecostal Church, and Jane was 9 years old. God, you already know how this is going to go, don't you? Jane was 9 years old when it is alleged that Mac Charles Andrews, pastor and servant of the loving Christ at United Pentecostal Church in Thomasville, took her to her daddy's grave. He was comforting her in her time of loss. Did I say already that Jane, that's a pseudonym because she's a child. Jane was 9 when this happened. He'd been grooming her for about 2 years because this servant of the living Jesus has a thing for having sex with children. He took her to her daddy's grave and said, he told me if I didn't say anything, he would come back and put flowers on the grave. If I did say anything, he said demons would come and get me from my bed. Man of God, Mac Charles Andrews, is 55 years old. Jane said, my ex-pastor is my rapist. Mm-hmm. He is expected to enter a plea to the charges. It was back in October of 2013 when he was arrested on multiple counts of rape, sexual abuse, attempted rape, sodomy, and sexual torture. He has since been in the Clark County Jail on $500,000 bond because apparently the United Pentecostal Church of Thomasville couldn't raise the bail. Multiple minors, were raped by this man in the late 80s and all the way up into the 1990s. There were, according to the district attorney in the case, Spencer Walker, as many as 9 victims. He said, I don't have any indication there are others, but it's possible. The church has since changed its name. No one is answering the phone. Jane, who has since grown up, said a 7-year-old girl isn't ready to take a full-grown man. He started grooming these girls early. In the name of Jesus. She was raped, Jane was, victimized from the age of 7 to the age of 12 when she got out. She said a lot of the victims stayed in the church. Jane had the after effects that many have in cases of sexual abuse. Jail time, poverty. She said, I made a lot of wrong decisions. It took me a long time to straighten out. Of the church, she said it was like a cult. Girls were forbidden from wearing makeup or pants. And the females had to wear floor length dresses. Huh. Sounds a little like the church that Sister Clerk Kim Davis goes to, doesn't it? Sounds a lot like the church Sister Clerk Kim Davis goes to. Usually, I adhere to my own advice to stay out of the comments, but as sad as, here's one, as sad as this is, you know, this is not going to end well. As sad as this is, it is important to remember that things that are done by evil people under the guise of Christianity is in no way indicative of Christianity. Anything can be perverted and used to satisfy truly evil desires, such as is the case here. Anything to provide cover for the nastiness of organized religion. But wait, what's that? Why? Huh? Let's run up to New York for a minute, shall we? And check in with Bishop Robert Cunningham of the Diocese of Syracuse, New York. Remember, please, that Jane, in the case down in Alabama, where what happened to the little girl was in no wise indicative of Christianity, a great world religion. Yeah. Well, Bishop Robert Cunningham of the Diocese of Syracuse, well, he could probably understand what happened there with Brother Andrews, even though he's a heathen Pentecostal and not part of the right brand of follower of Jesus. He gave testimony in the form of a deposition for a federal lawsuit. Charles Bailey, a survivor of priestly abuse, asked then-Bishop James Moynihan whether the church held children victims partly responsible for abuse from priests. In answer to the question, Bishop Cunningham, well, okay, back up. In answer to that particular question, Bishop Moynihan said, the age of reason is 7. So if you're at least 7, you're culpable for your actions. So having asked Bishop Robert Cunningham about it, he confirms that in the church, the age of reason is 7, and after that, kids are on the hook for seducing those poor priests. Bishop Cunningham was asked by the lawyer if he could imagine any circumstance in which a 14 or 15-year-old boy could be held responsible in the eyes of the church when a priest asks him to engage in sex. Bishop Cunningham said, obviously what the priest did was wrong. You're asking me if the young man had any culpability, and I can't judge that. Go figure. Can't decide whether or not. I mean, isn't the answer just no? No. When priests rape boys, the victim is blameless, not at fault. That was a tryst too far for the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, saved forevermore, going straight to heaven when he dies, bishop. Yeah. Hey, look, let's run over to the stress line, because lo and behold, from out in Nevada stand, it's Jim. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
What do you know?
I'm just enjoying, enjoyed the interview. That was great. It's amazing that that still goes on, but I know that's been going on for a couple of years, if not longer, you know, the, religification of the armed forces. The thing I ended up, but I was thinking about when you were talking about the, got into like the Protestant Reformation, and then I think about your favorite presidential candidate, Mike Huckabee, and how he just first of all, the Bible has been translated, I don't know, numerous times, and each time it changes a little bit, you know, and words have different meanings than they did 400, 500, 600, 800 years ago, 1,000 years ago when it was originally written. And you can't really explain that to them, but, or explain, you know, just like the coming of, you know, the Protestant Reformation and how, you know, what an impact, you know, what that caused, the mayhem that caused in Europe back then. And, you know, there was another, you think, well, they have like another Protestant first Catholic thing going, you know, you think, everything settled down. They decided to take their winnings and walk away.
I see. You've been out in Vegas long enough. Now you're using the gambling analogies, aren't you, Jim?
I thought I'd throw that in so you're paying attention.
Cash in, girlfriend. Yeah. That is... it's all about the entrenchment of power, don't you think? I mean...
Yeah, but you got like the big key coming. It just came to D.C. today, and I mean,
and let's give credit where credit's due. He said a lot of the right stuff today, and I imagine they're going to have to bring in fainting couches tomorrow in the House of Representatives. Don't you reckon?
Yeah, that'd be nice to see.
Or I don't know, just make. Make the Republicans wear those Mars Attacks fish bowls over their head, so when because it's going because their heads are just going to go, you know, and splatter all over the inside of the fish bowl with some of the stuff he's saying about the climate. I mean, it'll be the first time I've deliberately listened to a religious person in a very long time. I may actually tune in for that. You know, no pope has ever addressed a joint session of the Congress. And so it's kind of historic, but if he says anything like he was saying today about the climate and about the poor and I don't know. I'm hoping the defibrillators there in the House chamber are all charged up, and they got plenty of smelling salts.
Yeah. Yeah, but correct me if I'm wrong. 100 or 150, definitely 150 years ago, there's no way you have Pope coming over here.
Oh, no. No. And you know, Kennedy couldn't have done it because it would have proven to the John Birchers and, you know, the grandparents of the modern Tea Party that he was totally in the bag for the Pope at Rome. I mean, the first president to welcome a Pope to the White House was Jimmy Carter, of all people. How about that? Yeah. And I think that was, well, that'd be JP2, wouldn't it?
I guess. I'm not, believe it or not, I used to have my Pope playing card, you know, like baseball cards, but I lost them. I don't, actually, I lost them. I had to hock them to put up some money.
Oh, I understand. Well, I thought maybe you'd swapped them out for maybe some House of Windsor trading cards or something.
No. But, no, and like I say, it's interesting because of my family, you know, like my sisters, they're both, and my mom, because my mom's 80, and I guess when you start getting, well, I'm already past that point, you are too, you see more days than you're going to see. Then you kind of start thinking about, well, hopefully there is some sort of eternity thing. Yeah, and I'm way beyond that. I'm not even worried about it. I'm looking, not looking forward to a nice long mud nap. Of course, I'll just be in ashes because I plan on donating my body to, science and then whatever's left to just cremate. Because I don't believe in those graveyard things.
Right.
But,
waste of good real estate.
Yeah. And, but the, the whole, once you kind of look at, you just listen to him talk, and I can't listen to him much, but, Huckabee, coming out, and he's lying when he's talking about this woman was, victimizing. Wait, is she going to be, she's facing another potential jail term, did I hear?
She's been
charged.
I've been reading and I've been researching and I'm trying to figure out exactly where it is, but she's going to get hailed back into court, apparently.
It had enough of the spotlight?
I'm sorry, what?
She hasn't had enough of the spotlight?
She probably hasn't been. Get her back in there. The martyr meter is going down. Ooh, I like that, the martyr meter. We're going to have to remember that one, Jim.
The what?
The martyr meter.
Martyr meter.
Martyr meter.
Like a margarita. I thought you said like margarita.
No, martyr meter.
I know, I got you, I got you.
Okay,
got you.
Okay.
Coming through loud and clear. Maybe she met an interesting woman in jail. She's still doing time, they can hook up.
Maybe she made a special friend.
I'll tell you, she's not the most attractive woman in my opinion, and I know there's more.
No, because see, we're progressives, and we're not allowed to point it out when a woman is when a woman is uglier than a mud fence.
I mean, just like
we can't point out, as I noticed to my horror last night, we cannot point out, Jim, that Carly Fiorina bears a striking, disturbing resemblance to Marilyn Manson. Disturbing to Marilyn Manson, that is, but we can't do that because that's not nice.
So saying something like she took one too many snacks with an ugly stick would be inappropriate.
No, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. Only the right wing can do that and you know, tell jokes about the Hillary special at Kentucky Fried Chicken or how it is that she won't wear mini skirts because she don't want nobody to see her balls and only the right wing can do that. I mean, only Rush Limbaugh can tell jokes about trans women and say, "Yeah, my friend," trans men and say, "Yeah, yeah, she wasn't happy being a female, so she had an operation. It's called an adidectomy."
No, in her defense, Hillary's not a spring chicken by any stretch of the imagination. And I don't think anybody...
Yeah, and she's not running for swimsuit model either.
No. You know, that just shows how really cool. I mean, the Republicans have one rule for them and one rule for...
Right, and I mean, and it all falls under that general subheading of IOKIYAR. It's okay if you're a Republican.
Yeah, it's just like all the chicks on Fox News are fairly attractive. I'll admit that, but...
Well, they're not. Look, it would be disingenuous to say that the women on Fox News are unattractive because they are hired specifically. I mean, I can't imagine what the hiring interview is like, but by now, I mean, they've been on the air long enough, I would think that that everybody applying for a job, every woman applying for a job, knows that you do not go in there with a skirt whose hem is below one's knees. I mean, those legs are going to be on display. All you got to do, if you don't mind your brains being reduced to a sort of thin protein-laden gruel, all you got to do is turn on that outnumbered program, and there are 10 long, and I mean, you know, for the heterosexual men among us and perhaps the lesbian women, gorgeous legs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fact.
All you have is that one exception which proves the rule. What's her name? The lawyer chick used to be on CNN. You know the one, Greta.
Oh, Ben. Greta. Yeah. Van Susteren.
I guess they just wooed her over with money to quote unquote give them some legitimate.
Oh, they made her go. They made her go have plastic surgery. And by the way, while we're talking, Jim, I have to point this out in regard to Sister Clerk Kim Davis. Stand by for just 1 minute, Jim. I got to do this. We have a toaster to pass out tonight to other Jim. Jim, not far from me here in West Virginia, gets the toaster tonight. In reference to Sister Clerk Kim Davis, Jim just observed, but Bob, she can sit on her hair. When that thing rolled in a minute ago, I had to mute the microphone. I started. She could sit on her hair.
Yeah, she does have long hair.
Well, she's not. She's not allowed to cut it because God will be mad at her. God is apparently a hairstylist.
Well, aren't there like some sects where women aren't supposed to cut their... I know there's men's sects.
Yeah, no, this is one of them, the Apostolic Holiness Bunch. And if she wants to do anything different with it, other than let it just sort of hang way down there where she can sit on it, she can go to the local local beauty parlor, and she can... And this is a real term, I bet you know it. I mean, I bet they use this down in Louisiana, Stan. She can get her hair done up to Jesus. And have, like, big old Marge Simpson hair.
Yeah. No, I remember back in my younger days, I used to have long hair, not quite as long hair, but almost, you know, young shoulder length. And after a while, it gets to be a pain in the ass because you gotta wash it more. And it's just, especially if down here, it's out here in Vegas or even in Louisiana, Sam, it's hot. So.
Oh, Lord, yeah. And the humidity down in a place like Louisiana, Stan? The woman spends all that time with her straightener and everything, getting it, and then just walk out into that 112% humidity in a Louisiana August, and it just goes, you know. And the next thing you know, it's, you know, she's got a natural going on.
So it just seems more the same as Huckabee's up to his little huckster tricks and. You know, the Christians are always being persecuted, and I get so sick and goddamn tired of that crap, you know, them acting like that. But they're still the majority, and probably will be till I go to the great beyond. Unless there's some huge, I remember seeing an article a couple of months ago that where atheism is like really growing by leaps and bounds, where atheism and the agnostic quote unquote movement, whatever, start that rumor with you, me, and Malloy behind the atheist. Can you imagine you, me, and Malloy going door to door? Hi, I'm Jim. I'm Mike. I'm Bob. We'd like to talk to you about being an atheist.
Can we talk to you about the non-existent deities plan for your life?
Non-existent non-plan.
Yeah, the non-existent deities non-plan for your life. And you know, I don't know how to classify myself. In the final analysis, I'm just not particularly content with anybody trying to tell me that they got the inside skinny on what happens after you die. Because ain't nobody ever come back. Even if you read the resurrection story, you know, Jesus isn't, he's not there in the gospel saying, oh yeah, I went up there, it was awesome. There was a stripper factory and a beer volcano. I mean, dad had to kick me out to make me come back down here. You don't want to leave when it is freaking good. Because all you got are those Old Testament references to the cities with streets paved with gold. And those are just the fantasies of the people who spend all their time living in dirt and squalor and filth.
Well, the funny thing about the streets paved with gold, if gold's that plentiful, all of a sudden it loses its value.
But it's clean and it's smooth and it's cool. Whereas where they lived, it was hot and dirty and dusty and nasty. And you know, the pearly gates and all of that. No, they just want to go somewhere nice. When you die, you know, you don't have to live in all the filth and squalor anymore. Bonus.
Yeah. Remember the basketball star from LSU, Pete Maravich?
Oh, sure, yeah. Pete Maravich actually touched me on the shoulder once upon a time.
Well, really? Wow.
Yeah, back when nobody had quite yet figured out that, back when they were still playing NBA basketball in Baltimore, and no one had figured out that maybe it wasn't a good idea to name a basketball team the Bullets. The Baltimore Bullets and the Atlanta Hawks played an exhibition game in my hometown, and I got to go, and it was fun. And in the tunnel there leading to the locker rooms, Pete Maravich came walking by and just tapped me on the shoulder. How about that?
Well, the reason I bring him up is I remember he was still playing, and then he kind of got involved in some Eastern philosophy meditation. And then next thing you know, he discovered Jesus. And I think I can remember seeing an excerpt of that on the 700 Club. But then after that, Jesus killed him and took him home. just when he was getting ready, you know? You know, why does Jesus do things like that, Bob? I don't understand. Maybe you have better insight to me. But is that how you recollect the final days of Pete Manning?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
He had so much to tell him to do. And he could be a televangelist of mighty big importance.
I
guess the Lord works in mysterious ways.
The lard does. It properly worked into flour, the lard can make you some wonderful biscuits, and you can and when they're warm, they will melt several types of cheeses. Therefore, cheeses is lard.
Jesus is Lord.
No,
okay. I gotcha. You're pretty good, Bob. I'm gonna have to start. Sometimes I even sit down and listen and write down some of your little quips because they're pretty. You know, if you're not on your A game, you can miss some of them. You know, so I try to stay on my A game.
Oh, absolutely.
So that being said, I'm gonna disconnect and let some other. What's the word I'm looking for? True believer.
Yes.
Non-existence of Sky Spugosity. I'll let them get through.
All right, Jim. You have yourself a good evening out there in Nevada, Stan. And well, it's not even hardly evening there, is it? It's 4:51 p.m. out there.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things about. Left Coast time.
Oh, I loved the Pacific time zone when I was in it, but my personal feeling is that the sanest of all time zones in the United States is the Central time zone. Everything,
wow.
You know, Monday Night Football comes on at an hour where you can watch the whole game and not feel like you've just been beat up when you get up to go to work the next morning. The news comes on earlier, what used to be Letterman Carson came on at a reasonable hour. Yeah.
Yeah, because like if I wanted, in fact, I saw the Late Show last night. I had to wait till 11:30. Yeah. Oh, you had on your buddy, Mr. Toupe, Trump. Yeah, I guess it's interesting. I miss Dave. I guess that's an aspect.
Yeah, but I think Stephen Colbert is going to do a pretty good job. I caught a little bit of him talking with T-Rump, and I don't
know. You're not going to get a Bob Kincaid cross-examination. Yeah. Trump wouldn't put up with it.
No, and Stephen Colbert works much more subtly, but the thing that I got to mention this because I think it was Sparky that pointed it out. Did you happen to notice what Stephen Colbert had last night? He had a swirly straw.
Oh yeah, when he dressed up when he did the character.
Yeah. So, hi, writing staff for Stephen Colbert. Thanks for listening. Who knew? You never know.
What?
I mean, we've only been talking about the swirly straw for a couple of years now.
He's got I think he's doing pretty good. I mean, it's just like the guy on took John Stewart's place. He's really at first. It took him a couple of weeks or a month or two to. Get his footing, and I remember they used to have him on, and he'd do his little 2-minute piece or whatever. And like I said, I allegedly did stand up comedy for a while. It takes a while to find your voice and how you're going to present. You know.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's not that's hard work too, and it takes a while to get into that groove.
Yeah, get your groove on. All right, Dad, I'm gonna close on that.
All right, we'll talk to you later, Jim. Have a good evening. Bye now. Yeah, what to my wondering eyes should appear but, you know, a freaking swirly straw? You never know who's listening. Earther pointing out Jim Ward over at Stephanie Miller Show swears Jon Stewart would steal some of their material. Well, I don't like to think of it as stealing. I'd just like to get a Christmas card or something. So here we are at 6 minutes before the hour. Both lines are open, as well as the Skype line. Skype on Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. A private message to Isaac. No, I won't think about that. That's disgusting. The backs of my eyeballs are burning, and now I have to shower in bleach. Thanks, Isaac. Owe you one. So, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, 304-574-8178 if you want to jump into the conversation, or 304-663-4676, 304-663-4676, get you onto the stress line, which is what Jim was on just now. Any way you want to participate in the conversation, you are absolutely welcome. Oh, yeah, lots of fun this evening. I'm just a little curious. I want to see if maybe this damn thing works now. I went through an entire reboot there while we were talking. I am a multitasker. This is the horn. Hey, we got $97 to go to match Laborman's Prayer Meeting Wednesday challenge. That means your $97 would get turned into $194. Ooh, I did that real fast! Or anything below it gets doubled, that kind of thing. And we're hopefully going to have everything taken care of so that I can be out of here for a week and have the bills paid in advance. Okay? Okay. All right. Does this thing work? Yes. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm just so dang happy the thing works. It's a miracle. As Sister Carol pointed out, your sins are forgiven. And they apparently were. Yeah, because I'm washed in the blood. Right. This is the Horn Prayer Meeting Wednesday. You know, just had to get one of those in there because, you know, I didn't do the shtick at the beginning of the program. It was a lovely dinner, an absolutely lovely dinner there in the fellowship hall, I want you to know, just in case you're wondering. Mm-hmm. Deacons went right through the dessert again. Dang it. Just a second here. A little quick reminder for you. I've mentioned the past couple of nights that we're being carried on FYI Nation now. Hi, gang! Tickled pink about that. FYINation.com. I'll be joining Doubting Tom this Sunday evening, live at 6 p.m. for a conversation thereon. Listen in. You might enjoy it. I'll try not to be a completely clueless yahoo. Because I'm not a completely clueless yahoo. I'm a reproductive freak! You know I am. Hey, it's a West Virginia area code. Could it possibly be Jim? Hey, Jim.
C'est moi.
Tu es?
Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Pretty good. It's a Jim kind of night. We've got Jim and Jim. You really, no, you hurt me with that. She could sit on her hair.
Well, you know, I just noticed that because I had an aunt who had hair length like that, and she would always brag to my father, "Well, I can sit on my hair," and my father would reply to her, "That's the most ridiculous thing I can think that a woman can do with her hair is sit on it."
Well, it only gets worse because our comrade Isaac up in Ohio pointed out. Isaac pointed out, well, if she can sit on that, she can probably walk on the other.
Well, his addendum to that remark was, well, honey, you'll have to sell it because you sure as hell can't sell it.
That's nice, too. That she can sit on her. Hey, look, Ma, I can sit on my hair. We could put a hashtag out there on social media. Things Pentecostals are proud of.
Well, I think he got that from the old 30s Reefer song by Lil Johnson, because I think the lyrics for that song that she did was, or the title was, that if I can't settle, I'll just sit on it. There you go.
Nice.
I was just noticing this afternoon the broadcast from Washington and the papal visit, which was extremely interesting. And of course, they made a saint out of this
Junipero Serra.
Yeah, who apparently, well, to hear one side, he was just a real good guy, and to hear the American Indians or a lady who represented them say, he wasn't.
You know, there just weren't a whole lot of good guys involved in the the conquest of the Americans.
And then subsequently, the Holy Father was going to have some type of confab with 20 Native Americans, and I don't know if it was a slip up on what's his name. Governor's son who's on CNN.
Andrew Cuomo? Andrew Cuomo. Chris Cuomo.
Chris Cuomo. And he let a couple things slip. Number one, he let the Pope's route slip because they use the Suitland Parkway, which I've driven many, many times. But getting back to this other thing, these Indians that were supposed to have a confab with the Holy Father, they were the ones who were supposed to have been supportive of what the Spanish did.
Oh, I mean, there is a much underknown, understood, underappreciated history there that, I mean, I just happen to have run across and have been fascinated with ever since, Jim. The brutalities of the Spanish conquest of Mexico are legion. And yeah, a couple of priestly or clerical types did try to curb the abuses, and got not much in the way of thanks for it. But you know, the forcible, we understand now that the forcible conversion of millions of people, the brutal and violent suppression of their native religious practices, is just barbaric.
Well, you know, in my opinion, and what I've read, the conquistadors and the people who followed them, they were interested in only two things. Number one, to add to the ranks of the Catholic Church. And number two, gold.
Yeah, to add to the treasury of
Spain.
Of his most sanctified Caesarian and Catholic Majesty,
King Philip.
Carlos.
Well, Charles V was initiated, but Philip II, his son, certainly continued it. That's for damn sure.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. But I thought that was pretty interesting that they would add that. They had this lady on there. I can't remember her name, but she was no great fan of any memories of the conquistadors and how the Indians suffered very brutally under the weight of that oppression of conquest.
And it wasn't just conquest, it was also genocide. I mean, let's do remember, as I pointed out before, we know now that the Western Hemisphere was more densely populated than either Europe or Asia at the time. And it was supporting sustainably and successfully those people. Even without the wheel. That's one of those things that the white European, well, they didn't even have the wheel. Well, they didn't seem to need it. Because they didn't have any great, I mean, the biggest potential draft animal they had was the llama. And that was in Peru, in the Andean region. That, you know, people in North America and as far down as Mesoamerica, no llamas.
Well, the Europeans definitely got a whole lot more out of that particular operation than the Native Americans did. I mean, look at foodstuffs like the potato and other things.
Oh, the Columbian Exchange changed the way...
I've read those 1491, 1493, and you know...
And those were mind-changing books for me. I mean, they just realigned the way I understood a lot of the New World and the New World before the arrival of the Spanish.
Well, at least the Spanish brought them pork.
and sheep and cheese and...
Yeah, lots of other things. So, but I guess it was a quasi-symbiotic relationship. But the Native Americans certainly, I think, came in on the short end of the stick, because I've read a great deal about the conquest of Mexico and Peru and stuff.
And see,
like
well,
that.
And well, one of the problems is that you have entire peoples dying, never even having seen a white person, because of the virulent fashion in which European diseases spread throughout the continents.
Yeah,
and that becomes one of the central origin myths that sort of gives a pass to white Europe for what it did. And that is the myth of the vast, pristine, untouched continent. Well, it had been touched. It's just that everybody was dead. Or not everybody, but enough to destroy. You had entire cultures by necessity having to rebuild and reinvent themselves. I mean, there are fascinating moments in those in that history. For instance, somewhere down south, not far from Selma, Alabama, they think they've never found the site of it, is the site of the Battle of Malbela, which very easily could have been the end of DeSoto right then and there. Of course, he went on and he didn't last much longer anyway. But
he caught the fever.
And who knows exactly what the fever was?
Well, that's true. I know they. I think they just finally buried him in the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
About all they could do with it.
Yeah, that's one of those things. There's that great big humongous painting in the rotunda of the Capitol of DeSoto discovering the Mississippi. When, of course, he never set eyes on the Mississippi. He was dead. He was deader than Pharaoh's doorknob by the time he got there.
Yeah, those guys would go from one tribe to the other, and they sort of caught on to it. The tribes did, the Indians did, and they said, "Well, no, we don't have any gold here. We know where it's elsewhere. So if you go that way yonder, you'll find it." And that's how they tried to get rid of them.
Yeah. El Dorado, that city of gold. Yeah, been there a million times. It's great. You're gonna love it if you leave right now. You can get there in about 6 weeks, but I wouldn't wait. You know, winter's coming. Get going right now. It's just about a 6 week march that way. And you point them, and what they were doing was pointing them toward the tribe of people that they liked the least. I mean, in the case of Cortez, you know, Cortez and his merry little band of murderous greed heads. You know, they're not the ones who conquered the Triple Alliance there in the Valley of Mexico. It was the fact that they convinced a band of people who had a long history of really hating the Triple Alliance's guts to jump in with them. And so, consequently, you could have 30,000 or so well-armed warriors at your back.
Bob, may I interrupt you?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sort of getting a bad transmission on my end. Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I am not. Okay, there's something.
I just wondered.
No, there's something. There's something going. There's something going on with Skype.
Oh, okay. I know my speaker's cutting in. I just wondered what it was. Well, you know, it happened, and there's not a whole lot we can do about it, and. You have today one side of the coin portraying this guy who was canonized today as being okay. Interesting thing about it was they had skipped the second process of beatification, which I never understood. But and then, of course, you had the Native Americans. PhD, they said, no, it was a very bad thing. And this guy may have established 9 outposts of Catholicism, but it did not benefit what was then part of Mexico, which is today California.
Right.
And that's about it. But tomorrow, he's going to address both houses of Congress, and I just wonder how that's going to fit in with their kerfuffle over this health care thing.
Oh, I would like to think that maybe, Jim, a whole bunch of Republicans will just give birth to bouncing baby aneurysms right off the top.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I just wonder because, I mean, I like Pope Francis a great deal. I think he means well, but he is firmly ensconced in Catholic doctrine about women's health care and stuff like that. I mean, I think a lot of people think that he is relaxing the strictures of that, but he is not. Now, he's put a very good face on a lot of things, which I agree with, but I just wonder what they're going to do. The Senate's going to vote tomorrow on that bill, and that bill is tied to shutting down the government.
Yep.
And I just wonder exactly I thought to myself, well, you know, I think the Speaker of the House certainly has a good chance of using that papal visit for his own ends. I don't know.
I mean, Boehner's a Roman Catholic. But,
oh yeah, he said today that he would not in any way conflict with the Holy Father.
Well, that ain't the case with at least one Roman Catholic member of the House, Jim. I don't know if you've heard about Representative Paul Gosar, but he's going to boycott the speech tomorrow. I've
forgotten what were his reasons.
Well, I got it right here because I've actually got his letter. Damn thing's 2 pages long.
That's okay. You can.
Yeah, media reports indicate.
Just give me a pricey.
Okay. Well, this is. I think this is the pull quote. Media reports indicate His Holiness instead intends to focus on the brunt of his speech on climate change, a climate that's been changing since first created in Genesis. More troubling is the fact that this climate change talk has adopted all of the socialist talking points, wrapped false science and ideology into climate justice, and is being presented to guilt people into leftist policies. If the Pope stuck to standard Christian theology, I would be the first in line. If the Pope spoke out with moral authority against violent Islam, I would be there cheering him on. In other words, if the Pope would behave like a bloodthirsty Pope from, say, the 15th century, Paul Gosar would be right there.
Yeah, he might like Alexander the VI or some of the others. Who knows? I don't know. I'll tell you. The whole thing is, well, it's up to whatever it happens and whatever they do. But I just wonder how close are they to shutting down the government over this? And if they try to do that, I just wonder, well, I guess they'll pass a continuing resolution or shut down the government. That's basically it, isn't it?
Well, it is, and the only calculus involved with that, Jim, is whether these Republicans think that there will be anything in the way of a price to pay if they do shut down the government. And remember, they're going to shut down the government, and this is the most maddening part of it. They're going to shut down the government over the Planned Parenthood stuff that is an entire fraud to begin with.
Well, I understand there are certain questions about the validity of this film that was shown to people like Carly Fiorina and things like that. And, of course, you've got people who will interpret deliberately to suit their own particular interest. Exactly how they're going to use it.
Well, I mean, this Gosar guy goes so far as to, I mean, this is kind of scary. Listen to this. When the Pope chooses to act and talk like a leftist politician, then he can expect to be treated like one. What does he want? Does he want him shot?
Well, I think Pope Francis said today that he was no lefty. That was the comment I heard today on CNN. And, of course, he tried to make some obligatory references to immigration and things of that nature, but I just hope that they will try to take it for what it's worth and not cost the United States Treasury, I don't know how many billions of dollars a government shutdown would generate. I don't know. So
well, the funny thing is, Jim, it'll be hell on the people of the United States. But for the people who support a shutdown, they will fundraise their little white asses off on it. They'll make a fortune off of it, and we need to bear that in mind.
By shutting down the government.
Yeah, because then they'll send out fundraising letters.
They're what now? I'm sorry.
They'll send out fundraising letters. Friend, Can you spare $5 as I stand in the breach against the brutalities of Planned Parenthood?
Planned Parenthood. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the thing about it is, I think their interpretation of that program is so misunderstood, because it does a great deal of good for women's health, women's issues, and things of that nature. But what they're going to do, and what they have done, is to try to make these people who are advocates of Planned Parenthood and, you know, the people who support the programs that ameliorate conditions among women's health, they're just trying to make them look like something that Dr. Mengele would have conceived.
Precisely. And see, you said a minute ago that you understood that there were some questions about the validity of these videos. There are no questions, Jim. They are entirely, absolutely debunked and have been exposed as the frauds that they are. And when it comes down to Carly Fiorina, please let's remember, even if you sit down and watch the fake Planned Parenthood videos, what she says she saw isn't even in those videos. I mean,
well,
she's a towering liar.
I'm sorry, Bob.
She's a towering liar. She doesn't. I mean,
well, I know she is.
These are and whoppers.
I mean, you know, if you want to take her record and take a look at some of the stuff she did when she was with Hewlett Packard.
Exactly.
And of course, I sent you an email last night about, oh, her having her private yacht towed from sea to shining sea at Hewlett Packard's expense, and then she bought into these other companies. And that's one thing Trump said that I really agree with, because he really nailed her right between the eyes. Because one thing about Donald Trump, I mean, he is a businessman, and if anybody can tell you about business and bad business, well, he can. I mean, you know, Donald Trump is kind of like Joe Kennedy. That's one of the reasons FDR made him head of the SEC, because he said, "Well, it took a crook to find a crook." And you know, as far as I'm concerned, Carly Fiorina, if anybody knows anything about stupidity and crookedness, I think she'd probably be a proponent of it.
Oh, she's got plank ownership.
She's just a horror. Tell you the truth, when I saw her the first time, she looks a lot like Shelley-Moore Capito. If you look at her.
Well, you know, in some circles, Jim, them would be fighting words.
Oh, really? I see. I don't know. I'll tell you. It's just, it's more than my tiny little head can absorb at times. And, you know, that's just about it. But, I will say this. They had good weather today for the ceremonies and things of that nature. And good things were said. Strange things were said. Opposing views on certain subjects, like the treatment of the American Indians or the Native Americans of the Southwest, were certainly aired. That's one thing CNN tried to do, because they did bring that woman on who just told it like it was. And, of course, you had, oh, it was after, I think, the canonization, that you had the guy who was the Archbishop of Washington make this guy who was canonized look like the saint that they were trying to make him to be. I don't know. You know.
Well, I mean, it is a functional reality of the Roman Catholic Church, Jim, that they are going, that it is going to be a big ball of contradictions, and it's taken 2,000 years to create some of these meaner policies, and it may take 2,000 more to get away from them, if ever. But I give credit to this Pope for getting some stuff right.
You know, I had this woman, I guess she's still a friend. She's a very, very staunch Roman Catholic. And she was married for 22 years and had a very, very terrible marriage. And as a matter of fact, she still uses her husband's last name. But her out of that marriage was some type of dispensation.
And thus and an annulment.
An annulment, yeah, exactly. And so...
And yet you never hear these right-wing freaks who hoot and holler about Sharia law. Jim, you never hear them hollering about church law, and it is very much in effect.
But she asked me one night what I thought about same-sex marriage. And I said, well, let me think about that just for a second. And I said, well, if marriage is like the marriage that you had and what you told me about and how unfulfilling it was, and your annulment, I would say, hell no. I'm not in favor of it because I wouldn't want to see anybody go through what you did.
Well, that's similar to something a friend
and
of mine...
And that pissed her off.
That's similar to something a friend of mine said, namely, he said, I'm opposed to gay marriage because I'm opposed to heterosexual marriage. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to humanity.
Well, 50% of the country probably would agree with you because most of them fail. 50% do.
50% of yeah, 50% of marriages fail in the first 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, she was one of those people who would ask questions. Of course, she always thought she knew the answer first, and whenever she would ask me any question, you know, relating to something like that, I already knew what her mind was, and so I just decided to stick it to her. And, you know, because undoubtedly one of the unhappiest people I have ever known, but still kept her husband's last name. And he remarried, now he's dead, but she still keeps her husband's last name. Her maiden name was Gasparini. I said, Lorraine, are you ashamed of the fact that your maiden name begins with a vowel? I don't think she liked that either. After that, strange enough, she and I kind of stopped talking.
I was going to say, I bet communications kind of fell off after that.
Yeah, it did.
Imagine
but,
that.
And I knew exactly what she was trying to do and stuff like that. And of course, there was a situation, so we had good talks and stuff like that. But, I mean, it got toward the end. It was just not very good. But a point in bringing that up is, there are some people who are so doctrinally imbued about everything, no matter what you try to discuss with them, they're going to come back to some type of hot-button issue to try to provoke you or to try to
I guess some people just get off on that.
Yeah, they get off on that. And yet then they, by their own example... Well, they haven't led such a sterling example of what I consider to be a happy person. And I don't know. I just thought I'd bring that up because, I mean, you know, the marriage thing and how, you know, the Pope feels about that. And then, of course, when she was trying to lead me into that about the same-sex marriage thing, and I just said, well, compared with yours, I say, hell no, I wouldn't want anybody to go through that. And I know I'm repeating myself, but I do so for, you know, emphasis.
Indeed.
Who knows? But at least we can be very well content to think that, or to know that that lady in Kentucky can sit on a hair.
But, I just love
but
that.
If she's going to go the court again, I mean, can you give me a brief update on what she's doing? I mean, is she complying with the court order, or
no? She's engaging in the most. I'm hard pressed for a genteel word, Jim. She's behaving in the most pissy of contumacious behavior. She is monkeying with the prescribed forms that are set by law that constitute a marriage license. She has altered. She has altered the forms that are prescribed by law that she has no power to alter. And so, yes, she's getting hailed back into court.
I wonder what the judge is going to do with her.
Well, he exercised a substantial degree of mercy in the first place because, you know, with contempt, and I'm sure you're familiar with some of this, with contempt, you know, the prisoner, the contemnor is said to hold the keys to her own cell. In other words, all she has to do is comply with the lawful order of the court and she's free as a bird. That's why there's right. That's why there's no bail. But in her case, the judge, sua sponte, you know, on his own hook, said, I'm going to let her out. I think she's learned her lesson. She says she won't interfere with the process. Okay. And of course, a certain degree of mootness had attached, because by then, the people who had been denied licenses were getting licenses. So no sooner does she get back into her office than she starts monkeying with the forms. I mean, it takes a lot of brass to decide to just flip off a federal judge, and that's essentially what she's doing. And it puts a judge in a hell of a position, especially a Republican appointee of dim leader. He knows where he lives.
Well, I guess if she is, you know, according to my interpretation of the law, in her situation, if she is not in full compliance, then she's going to have to suffer the consequences of being incarcerated.
It would seem so. But for how long? I mean, how long? She spent a week in the, 5 days in the stir. And that didn't...
Well, you know, if I were that judge, knowing my temperament, and if somebody who had tried to play tricks on me the way she's tried to play tricks on him, her ass would be in jail for the length of the term that she was elected.
Well, but I mean, but legally, he can't do that, Jim. He can only jail her for so long as she engages in her contumacious behavior.
And she's being paid $80,000 a year.
Yes.
By the citizens of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, which isn't exactly the richest place in the world, except for a couple parts of it. She gets to sit up there and try to get herself in the limelight and stuff like that.
And, okay, I'm just sitting here brainstorming a little bit, and I'm thinking about how he could go about really getting his message across to her, because I mean this isn't water across little Helen Keller's palm. She's not getting the message. So he can stick her in jail. And the problem last time, remember, he specifically said he wasn't going to fine her because people would just do a GoFundMe or something and pay her fines for her.
Yeah.
Okay, so consider this. Creative judging. He sticks her ass back in jail. And he says, in addition to sticking you in jail, I am going to fine you. And the blank that he fills in is however much her monthly salary is. And he says, and just to be clear, I'm going to send garnishment papers to your office, which will make sure that your salary is paid directly into the court for as long as you continue to engage in this behavior.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking about, too. In other words, if she wants to sit in jail, she can do so, and her salary will go to pay her fine, or she will be without her salary. And that would be it.
And now that some of the crowdfunding sources like Indiegogo and GoFundMe have revised their terms of use, it'll be a little harder to raise that money for salary replacement. So with any luck at all, it might mean that, let's say, you know, she's got a mortgage, she might be going into a default situation. That would probably take about 90 days.
Well, I'm sure that's probably covered by people, whatever, you know, they would stand behind her the way those people think. So who knows? We'll just see what the judge's decision will be. But my only final comment is that, you know, when you take an oath, and you take an oath, I've taken an oath many times, at least at the federal level. I don't know what level she took it at, but I think it's basically the same to uphold and support and defend the Constitution without any purpose of evasion. That's pretty binding for me.
Well, and of course, we read her oath on air one night. And the biggest part of the Commonwealth of Kentucky oath is that she swears she is not engaged in any dueling since the passage of the Constitution.
Dueling? They still have it in the oath?
Yes. Well, it's Kentucky, Jim.
Lord have mercy. I tell you, that is too much. They couldn't have deleted that, or do they still have the duels in Kentucky?
Apparently they think it still needs to be there.
Well, I say this, let them all go. Call each other out on the field of honor, and may the best, whomever, have the best shot or do what he wants to do. That's about all I had to say, and I just thought I would just comment on a couple things.
Well, I appreciate it. It's good to hear from you.
Thank you. It's a strange thing. And you're going to Atlanta next week?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I will. I'll be passing through North and South Carolina, and then it takes that sort of southwestward angle down into Hotlanta.
Or is there some kind of conference about mountaintop removal or whatever?
It's about activism.
Oh, on all fronts.
New strategy, tactics, that kind of thing.
I see. Well, I'm sure you'll probably gain a great deal of information from it. And
I'll definitely have to run by the varsity over there on, what is that, North Avenue, and get me a couple of chili dogs all the way walking and some onion rings and a jumbo FO. Frosted orange.
Well, bon appetit. Well, that's all I can say. So you're not going to be passing through South Carolina?
Oh, I will be. Yeah, I mean, I'll be going. I think I'll be going right through, like near Columbia.
Okay.
It's about an 8-hour drive from here to there.
Right. Well. Okay. Well, listen. You take care and have a good evening, and I will, whatever happens, happens, right?
Amen.
You never know, Bob. You never know.
Never indeed. Jim, you take care and have a good evening.
Right.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim, not too awfully far from over this here away. About 22 minutes before the hour, again, we have $97 to finish off Gary Laborman's Prayer Meeting Wednesday challenge. It would be awfully nice if we could round that up by the end of the evening. Thank you very kindly, Gary, for making that. It's vitally necessary. Carol suggests, you know, that maybe Judge Bunning needs to order Sister Clark Kim Davis to do some community service at an AIDS clinic. And he could conceivably do that if she was charged with a crime. But unless I'm mistaken, he's kind of limited by virtue of the nature of contempt. He can jail her, he can fine her, he can jail her and fine her. But I don't know if he, I don't know. I have a feeling that there would be an immediate appeal if he tried something like that. And the last thing you want is to let one of these right-wing circuit courts get their hands on this. Because the Supremes and the Circuit can't reach down and just grab the case. He's got jurisdiction for as long as he exercises it. So that's how that works. And you know, Carol seems to be the opinion that if he finds her, her salary, that they'll just load her bank account. It's possible. The judge may be right. But somewhat, the problem with contempt is you have to get through to the contemner. You have to get the message through. And this, I don't know if people realize it, but this really is a constitutional crisis. I really couldn't care less about the particulars of Sister Clerk Kim Davis's life. She's an awful human being. Enough said. But this is honest to God. I mean, this is a constitutional crisis, not all that far dissimilar from the Kansas-Nebraska Act or the Missouri Compromise. This is going to have to be resolved. And if the religion industry really is trying to gin up five or more, or more than five, that was the clip last night, more than five people to do this, then they are really trying to create a constitutional crisis. And constitutional crises, well, the purpose is to try to break constitutional governance. That's why I keep hammering on this message. This is not just some idle human interest story about an intransigent bigot. This is an actual salvo in an assault on the Constitution. As noted last night, the fact that they have basically decided that they're going to oppose the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, that should be a clue. Meanwhile, Jim referenced the papal visit. A little story for you. Now, this is human interest, but again, it points to a larger issue. Today, as the Pope traveled down, Constitution Avenue, a little girl, about 5 years old, there's a video of it. You can find it at the Southern Poverty Law Center's Facebook page. A little girl walked into the street as the Pope's motorcade rolled through. She wanted to give him a note. If you watch the video, you'll see that the cops just about, five cops come after her, so it does, as if she was some sort of tourist. Little Sophie is from Los Angeles. She's the daughter of Mexican immigrants who are desperately trying to remain here in the United States. Her note to the Pope, who did the right thing, by the way, he didn't follow, there's no verse in there in which Jesus said, "And yea, verily, they came unto Jesus, and Jesus did look unto his driver and say, gun it." No. I disagree with this man on a woman's right to choose, on the autonomy of a woman's body, on the right of people to love and marry the people they love, on whether or not women can do the magic of the mass, you know, priests. Condoms, birth control, all of that. But he behaved in the fashion of the man he professes to represent on this planet. Because as the cops were trying to corral little Sophie, he ordered the motorcade stopped and perhaps hearing the verse from the Gospels, "Suffer the little children to come unto me," he allowed the little girl to draw near. Here's the note that Sophie handed him. "I am an American citizen with Mexican roots. I live in Los Angeles, California, in the heart of agriculture. My parents are immigrants from Oaxaca, Mexico. Pope Francis, I want to tell you my heart is sad, and I would like to ask you to speak with the President and the Congress in legalizing my parents, because every day I am scared that one day they will take them away from me. I believe I have the right to live with my parents. I have the right to be happy. My dad works very hard in a factory galvanizing pieces of metal. All immigrants, just like my dad, need this country. They deserve to live with dignity. They deserve to live with respect. They deserve immigration reform because it benefits my country and because they have been working hard, harvesting oranges, watermelons, carrots, onions, spinach, and other vegetables. Don't forget about the children or anyone that suffers because they don't have their parents because of why? Violence and hunger. It's powerful. Now, that reference there, my parents are immigrants from Oaxaca, Mexico. There is an entire, you know, there's an entire sub-discussion to be had of, gee, why'd you need to leave Oaxaca? Oaxaca has successfully supported, probably over the ages, millions of human beings. But I suspect if you sat down and talked to Sophie's parents, they would explain what NAFTA did to Oaxaca. Or perhaps the drug violence that is entirely the bloody child of America's drug prohibition did to Oaxaca. And that line, "I am scared that one day they will take them away from me," her parents. I read somewhere once that the first identifiable fear of a child is the fear of separation from the parents. Fear generates stress, and stress impacts everything, especially in a critical time of life such as the age Sophie is now. That's not a fear. That's a horror. Because of people like Ted Cruz and Mike Huckabee and the entire Republican presidential candidate field and the vast majority of the Republicans in the Congress, both House and Senate, and good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian Republican voters everywhere, Sophie and hundreds of thousands of more like Sophie live a horror. Not with fear, but with horror. Because these miserable Republicans are merchants of horror. I mentioned an article that Dr. John sent along. We'll wrap up with this. And this speaks to what Jim was talking about regarding the conquest of Mexico. And what the Spanish did to native peoples. It's not like they just learned to commit atrocities when they arrived in the so-called New World. New. As old as the rest of the planet. No, they had some practice. In the 15th century, the Spanish started out not with just sending Cristobal Colombo across the ocean Azul. No, they had a warm-up. The warm-up was at a subtropical island called Gran Canaria, Grand Canary. Between the years 1478 and 1483, according to an article at Forbes by Christina Kilgrove, the crown, the most reverend, holy, sacred, sanctified Caesarian crown of Castile, assaulted the indigenous population of Gran Canaria by a coordinated effort that she describes as armed conflict, slavery, and death. The Spanish brought with them both weapons and diseases that the natives on Gran Canaria had never seen, as was the case in later genocides to be committed by the Spanish. A majority of the natives on Gran Canary died under the Spanish lash. This particular story is titled Bones of Indigenous Victim Reveal Brutality of European Colonization of Gran Canaria. There's not much in the way of archaeological evidence, but they have found recently the bones of a man buried in the traditional way of the indigenous people of that island. It is, of course, what happened to his body that tells so much. His skull bears the evidence of sharp force trauma to his head. The same sharp force trauma was applied to his arm, his back, and his pelvis. And it is evidence of the brutality of the genocide committed by the Spanish. This particular Forbes article is based upon an article published in the International Journal of Osteoarchaeology by Jonathan Santana Cabrera. There were five other bodies in the grave, all wrapped in textile shrouds and deposited in a natural cave. They have determined that the man was in his 20s when he was killed, and the carbon dating puts his death at the time when the Crown of Castile was murdering the population of the island. His body bears a total of 13 wounds in the upper body, inflicted by one or more swords swung from different angles of attack. All injuries occurred at the same time. There are no signs of healing, and their severity would certainly have caused the man's death. They determined clinically that the main injury to the skull was caused by an impact so powerful that it completely split the cranium. What's more, the Spaniard who killed him attacked him from behind. He was hit so hard that the frontal bone of the skull vault was separated from the bones of his face. There are hack marks, great monstrous chops, into the left humerus of the man. The injuries sustained by this victim, the article notes, were to areas that Europeans would have protected with armor. They had armor. The indigenous Canarians, however, fought naked or protected only by their normal clothing made from animal skins and textiles. Many did have wooden shields, usually held in the left hand, so this man's arm injuries could be explained as an attempt to disarm him. The authors of the article note this case represents an extremely violent episode in which one or several assailants inflicted serious injuries with completely different weapons from those normally used by the indigenous population of Gran Canaria. The wounds indicate the speed and aggressiveness of the attack. And how many thousands, if not millions of times, were these injuries repeated? All the way from that island up and down the Western Hemisphere's continents. This is the legacy. Like I said, I have issues. This is the legacy of the man of God who was declared a saint today. He traveled with the same sort of men, armed in the same fashion. And they engaged in monstrous brutality against the native population. That's the reality. There's no turning back the clock. There's no time machine. But that is damned sure the reality. By the way, the natives who did not submit to the loving grace of Christ Jesus on the mission in which Junipero Serra was involved were submitted to similar treatment in the loving name of Christ Jesus. And here endeth prayer meeting Wednesday. Hope you'll be around for Thorn in the Side Thursday tomorrow. And I thank you very kindly for your kind attention, and I hope you've gotten some degree of enjoyment out of this and every other evening on the Horn. Thank you for keeping it all going. Hopefully, maybe between now and tomorrow evening, somebody will respond with the remaining $97 of the Gary's Laborman's Prayer Meeting Wednesday challenge, or some portion of the 97. Hopefully, and you know, we can get there. Thank you to all of you who listen. Thank you to all of you who contribute to keep it going. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. and ACACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.